Are you angry? No, really. Has that one person got you fuming? Well, call them out. Now's your chance to tell them.
You know what? You just made the list.
You just made the list.
Here we go.
Let us know who's on your list. Call 615-737-1025. You just made the list. Now, on Darren, Donick, and Chase.
All right, it's time for You Just Made the List. You know the drill. It's Friday. It's a holiday weekend going in, and we want to hear from you. 737-1025. You can call in, and I'm going to make a special holiday offer. You can text in today on the list. And you know, if you want to text, obviously, you're probably not going to be able to go into as much detail as you do if you call in, but we just want to give you that option because we want participation. This is going to be fun. Who's on your list this week? Don't forget, we've got trivia coming up at 1. And at the bottom of this hour, do not miss the interview we're going to have with Dale Jarrett, NASCAR legend, former champion. Lots of NASCAR issues going on right now. And so if you follow that sport at all, you're going to really enjoy what you hear at 12:30 today. So Chase, you got anything? You got anything brewing there on your list? And I'll throw this out to Elijah as well if you guys want to get it started.
Well, we have a $25 gift card to Scoreboard Bar and Grill on the line. 615-737-1025. Call or text, and you can win that by telling us who is on your list. So here's who is on my list, and I think this is very timely to bring this up. Because as was announced yesterday, Nashville, America's Music City, we are now back in phase two. So we were in phase three, and we're feeling good about that. But numbers were going up with COVID-19, and so the mayor announced yesterday that we are going to be taking a step back to phase two. Everybody is being told they need to wear a mask when you're out in public, and yet when I get on Twitter, I still have people complaining about it, saying they're not going to, saying, well, masks don't do any good, quoting doctors. Okay, fine. That's how you feel? Whatever.
Those are untrue. That is untrue.
Right.
It doesn't work.
No. It
helps.
See, the problem is I get a tweet from somebody that's, here's one doctor that says it doesn't work, and this looks like this was a while ago. And then you have multiple doctors that say, no, actually it does. It does work. So I'm going to go with the majority on that. You believe what you want. But right now, you know, what is it? Rules are rules. Whether you like the rules or you don't like the rules, wear the mask. So if you are still one of those people that are like, no, I'm not going to do it. You can't make me. Well, then we're going to be in phase two forever because We have to change this. I want to be able to go out places again, just like all of you. So if that's a part of helping it, I tweeted out yesterday, if this gets us back into phase three, then I'm in. I'm going to do my part. So for those of you still refusing to wear the mask,
you just made the list.
There you go. Feel like that's an easy one today, Willie.
That is an important message. No question about it, and I agree. I'll add one, and then we'll give Elijah a chance to throw one out there. And this is an offshoot of what you just said, but when you have this group of people, in fact, there were people, I think, in Florida yesterday that filed a lawsuit. I think it was in Palm Beach County. And the theme of it, and this is not exclusive to this area, but you have this whole faction of people that are saying it's violating my rights, right? It's my right not to wear a mask. But it's such a hollow argument because, you know, you have a right, you have a choice, you have a right to not wear a seatbelt, right? You have a right to go 70 in a 55, but it doesn't mean that you can't be stopped and ticketed for that, right? It's the same. What's different about it? There's nothing different. So I don't know who started this whole thing. These are my rights as a citizen. But I could make a list of 100 things that, you know, I have a right. I can choose to do this or that. But it doesn't mean that I can't be ticketed or fined or be found in violation for doing such a thing. And that doesn't even get to, you know, it's not about you. You don't wear a mask just for you. You're wearing a mask for others and for the greater good. I mean, it just, there is zero argument, zero, to not wear the mask. Just zero.
Wear it.
So the my rights are being violated, people, specifically, I am putting you on the list.
You just made the list!
I agree. Yep. I have the right to call you an idiot for, you know, sitting there complaining about your rights. So, you know, just wear the mask. Or stay in. If you don't want to wear the mask, stay in.
There's another thing. Yeah.
You have
options.
You
don't want to wear a mask,
you have
stay
rights.
Inside. Yeah.
You have rights. You have options. I went to a place the other day, and as soon as I sat down at my table, it was permissible to take it off. So you could drink or eat or whatever. And then when you got up to move around, you put it back on. Not a big deal.
I also would say it's time for any establishment, whether it be a restaurant or a store or anything, it is time to go on the proactive route of telling people, you know, you can't come in without a mask. It's easy to let it slide. There's been enough time of letting it slide, right? We've just got
clearly
to break
that.
Clearly
that works.
It's going to have to go to another level of enforcing it. And even person to person, right? Just citizen to citizen. You know, I told the story earlier this week of a friend of mine that asked somebody not to get on an elevator. It was coming onto a crowded elevator without a mask. Asking that person to take the next one, right? We have to get there. We have to get these new habits. And it will make a difference. It will make a difference in the caseload, no doubt. All right, you got anything, Elijah?
All right, yeah. Mine is something we hit on a little earlier today, and it's going to be Daniel Snyder, the owner of the Washington football team, and he's got a chance to get himself off the list. I think him being on the list he's been on the list for many reasons, for just being an all-around
below-average
owner. Yeah, he can put himself half off the list. We can put Dan off the list and remain Snyder on the list, but
there you go.
He's got a chance to rectify something that's been on the minds of a lot of people that are clearly affected by it for a long time, and there's just no better chance than now for him to change the team's nickname right now. And honestly, I don't think he would have ever done it or would ever do it if it wasn't for the pressure he's being put under right now by a lot of the sponsors of the team, and especially the stadium, FedEx being, you know, the big one because they have a minority share and the franchise as well. I learned that throughout the course of this show as well. Not just the name on the stadium.
Smith.
Yeah, they have a stake in this as well. So there's a lot of pressure, and Dan Snyder can at least help his image a little bit. But for everything for that, and I know they released a statement today too, where they mentioned how they're considering, you know, the feelings of fans and the Native American population around Washington, D.C., but also used the team name in that letter like four different times. So it seems a little disingenuous, but so for right now, Dan Snyder.
You just made the list!
He has a chance to get off. He has a chance to redeem himself. Somewhat.
Somewhat, yeah. Well, it will be something if we could take him off the list. So that would be
the most 2020 thing on the planet. Yeah, that would be on brand for this
year. Him getting off the list, because of all years to get off the list for that guy, that would be newsworthy. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get some responses. And remember, today we're going to give you the opportunity, because it's a holiday weekend, you can text in who's on your list. 615-737-1025. And obviously, you can call us. We've got a $25 gift card from Scoreboard Bar and Grill for the best entry, and you've got to do it right now, so don't waste any time, because at 12:30 we'll be talking with Dale Jarrett, and then we've got trivia at 1. Stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. You just made the list. It's time to see who's on your list this week. going into the holiday weekend. Good news from Nashville SC. Masks on, wheels up. That is what their latest tweet says. They've been trying to get to Orlando the last couple of days. They were scheduled to originally leave on Wednesday, but it got delayed a little bit. But the players, they've got some pictures of the guys getting on the plane, and so they are off to Orlando. So best of luck to them. We'll have plenty of coverage on their tournament play starting next Wednesday as the MLS returns to play. That will be fun, and they're going to have the spotlight. That should be a great thing to cover. So next week on the show, we'll certainly be paying close attention to that. All right, 615-737-1025. Jump on in there and tell us who is on your list. Let's get it started. I believe, who we have up first here, Chase?
Well, Willie, you'll be happy to know that infringing on my rights guy texted in during the break to let us know that.
Oh, so, yes.
You know, well, we did
he's
hear
on the
from
list.
You stay on the list.
You just made the list.
We're not taking your freedoms away. Just wear a mask and stop complaining and annoying me. Let's go to Steve. Steve, welcome in.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Not much. Who's on your list?
Steve,
okay,
who's on the list?
On my list is Ian Poulter.
You just made the list.
No, but Ian Poulter, a.k.a. Windbreaker. Now, this guy was playing golf, and when his opponent hit the ball, this guy going to break wind. Sound like somebody starting up dirt bikes or something. And I'm wondering, what does somebody have to eat to make for his body to make a sound like that? And that's what tripped me out. I know it smelled like go-kart smoke over there, but wow, man. I don't know if y'all seen it or not, but hey. It is good for a laugh, but Ian Poulter, you on the list.
You just made the list!
Wow. No, I missed that. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Did you see that, Willie? I haven't seen that.
No, I did not.
I'll have to go look this up, though.
That sounds rather impressive, right, of anything.
Yeah, let's do some research on that. Yeah. Okay, I'm guessing we've got some phone lines open here. 615-737-1025. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes before we move on to Dale Jarrett here. So jump in right now, and you can win the prize to the Scoreboard Bar and Grill. Let's see what else we have here, Chase.
So Greg says, Chase, I want to add to yours, the people that have their kids wearing masks in public, but they are not. So you are smart enough to know that your kid needs a mask, but you're super parents, and so you don't need a mask. Put the mask on too, knuckleheads. You just made the list. That coming from Greg.
You just made the list.
I have seen that. I've seen like the kids have masks on, but then the parents don't. And I'm like, what? Okay. Like, where's the logic there? Just
yeah.
Do as
hey, I've
say
got,
and
I've got
as
another
I do.
One. Yeah, I've got another one that again. Sort of. Right, this is Twitter in a nutshell, right? I don't know if you guys saw Dick Vitale earlier in the week. Now, Dick Vitale lives in Florida, where it's a big hot spot. It's a big issue down there. So he's got his mask on, but to do the tweet where he did a little video, basically saying what we were saying. You know, enough is enough. Please wear the mask. You know, he had whoever was filming him had a background of people gathering in a bar, and a lot of people weren't wearing masks. So he does this passionate, as only he can, message, wear the masks, you know? But he pulled the mask down partially, so his nose was exposed, right? And so you look at the responses on the Twitter, and it's all the same thing. Dickie V, you got to wear the mask over your nose. You know, you think he doesn't know that? Like, he knows that you don't right. do that, right? But he did it for the video, right? So he could breathe while he was talking, right? He's 80 years old, right? How old is Dick Vitale? And so, of course, he's got to come back on the Twitter and say, yes, I know. I put the mask down a little bit so I could do the video.
Right. And that's,
but I mean, like these no, everybody on Twitter's got to be the know it all. Yeah, but your mask is pulled down over your nose. He knows. You know, that's not the point. Just get the get the message of the mask. Okay,
by the way,
let's not get distracted. But it was hilarious. It was like so Twitter that you do this. Like hundreds of responses saying, "Oh yeah, but let me point out that your mask is not over your nose." Well, we know. We saw that.
So speaking of Twitter. The the Twitter account, like the actual Twitter, at Twitter, says you can have an edit button when everybody wears a mask.
Yes.
I love that.
That should be blackmail. That should be illegal to hold that over our heads.
All right, 737-1025. Any other entries on the text line at this point, Chase?
No, not right now.
All right. Well, why don't we do this then? We will take a break, and then we will get set for Dale Jarrett, which is coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll also catch you up on the latest with what's going on in the NHL. If you missed it a little bit earlier, we'll tell you what Bob McKenzie put together with the timeline that they're hoping to get into, and then we'll be ready at 1 o'clock for trivia. So thanks for playing. You just made the list. Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we'll get to Dale Jarrett. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. How long was that video? All right. In just a few minutes, we will have a race car driver. Dale Jarrett will join us. A really good one, by the way.
Hall of Famer.
Looks like Hall of Famer, no question. It looks like Nashville SC is on their way to Orlando, and that is very good news. Also, a news story today, the Washington Redskins are doing an internal, evaluation of their nickname. It looks like there really could be more momentum than ever to perhaps changing their nickname. So that could be coming down the pike. Also,
Adam Schefter reporting that it's more likely than not they're going to change it.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I think we would all interpret it that way. And obviously, he's been talking to people. And finally, Bob McKenzie this morning coming out with more details. Now, we're still waiting for them to hammer out the last details of the agreement, but he continues to insist that the NHL and the NHL Players Association are very close on announcing a new agreement, which not only will set the table for this year, but have the CBA ratified and extended. But here is something that we had not heard until this morning, that he's actually got a tentative timeline coming up. And that would be, once they get everything ratified, it would now be July 13th would be the target date to start training camp. So a couple of days after the July 10th, which is what the initial date that was thrown out there for a good while. It went from July 1st to July 10th pretty quick, and then it's been July 10th for a while. Now it looks like July 13th. And then around July 26th, the teams would head to the hub cities with Edmonton and Toronto being those hub cities. Nashville would go to Edmonton, and they would have their series against the Coyotes start, the qualifying series, around August 1st is the target for that. And then those games would take place. Remember, there would be several series going on. There were, 16 teams playing in that. Around August 10th would be the end of that, and they would then hold the draft lottery. The losers, the eight losers of those series will be eligible for the lottery, and one of them will get the top pick because of the bizarre nature of how the ping pong balls fell, right? The team E got a spot at the top. So it will not be the Red Wings. It will not be the Senators. It will be one of the eight losers in that qualifying round. So that would be the consolation prize for somebody. And then the playoffs would begin after that. Early October is when they would target crowning the Stanley Cup winner. Of course, there's some flexibility in there. After that, you would hold the draft, and then, get this, the day after Halloween is when the new league year would start, which would include a free agent frenzy. Now, when we say free agent frenzy, I guess we'll have to look at what the salary cap is and what is the market, and at that point, what does it look like for having fans in the stands? All of that is TBD, but that is the plan right now, according to Bob McKenzie from TSN.
Yeah, and it's ever-changing, but it's nice to actually be able to, even though they're tentative, put some dates with everything and kind of get a timetable of how this season is going to go. Crowning a Stanley Cup champion in October, which is when the season usually begins, so that'll be crazy. November 1st being free agent frenzy. And if it is, in fact, on November 1, that's also the day the Titans take on the Bengals or are scheduled to. So it's going to be a wild few months if everything goes as planned. And I know we keep using the word if, and it's unfortunate we have to, but with things changing on a daily basis with this virus, that's just kind of where we're at. So Bob McKenzie has done a tremendous job with TSN following this story. Hopefully, over the weekend, as we celebrate Independence Day here in America, they get it all figured out and there's some resolution. I know that from the owner's side, they get on a conference call and it'll be, you know, pretty much good to go with the players. They have to go through the voting process and ratifying that. So it takes a little more time. You know, we'll get to that when we get to it. And hopefully that happens here in the next few days. So I know that we're all looking forward to getting some hockey underway. And as you mentioned, Nashville SC headed down to Orlando. That's very good news as well, Willie. I know we're about, yep. I think we have him. So
yeah.
It's time to talk a little racing. Let's say hello to the 1999 Cup Series champion and Hall of Famer, Dale Jarrett of NBC Sports. DJ, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
You know, we're hanging in there, and I asked that question of how you're doing because I know a few weeks ago you announced you did test positive for COVID-19. Glad to hear you're doing well.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have a very mild case of it. Actually, a little shocked because I really didn't have much in the way of symptoms or anything, a slight cough, but got through that period, and everything's going well. I feel really good and excited to be here in Indianapolis this weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. It's a doubleheader weekend, not only with NASCAR continuing their schedule, the Brickyard 400 July 4th weekend, the first time that it's been there. Usually we're talking about Daytona and the firecracker, but with the schedule changing, and this was already a change going to the Brickyard, but in the IndyCar series, they're going to run on the road course along with the Xfinity series on Saturday. Going to be fun having the doubleheader this weekend.
Oh, just what a historic weekend for motorsports. Just incredible. You know, it was back in 1994 that we brought stock cars and NASCAR racing here to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the first time. And a lot has happened since then. But this has been talked about for a long time, that having an IndyCar, NASCAR race weekend at the same venue. And it's just incredible. The downside of it is there's going to be no fans here to enjoy it. So I'm out here today, and it's just a little bit strange to be around here and no fans wandering around and looking to get autographs and things like that. But as far as the racing goes, just incredible. I've never seen cars on the road course. So I've been taking this morning and this afternoon. The Indy cars just finished their first practice about 30 minutes ago, and the Xfinity cars now are on this road course for the very first time. And so it's going to be interesting to watch that tomorrow afternoon. Of course, you can get all of that on NBC, and should be just exciting racing. And then getting to Sunday for the Cup race and the Brickyard 400, which is this is just one of my favorite places in races that we have on the schedule.
Well, you won there. You're a Brickyard 400 champion, and you were actually, I believe, the first to kiss the bricks. If I'm not mistaken, that you started that tradition. That's got to be cool to have that distinction.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, when Todd Parrott, who was my crew chief for a lot of years, and we were sitting around talking about doing something different, if we were fortunate enough to come here and win, and that was our first year with the 88 car in 1996, we battled our teammate Ernie Irvin right down to the very end and got the win. And so everybody, we were having so much fun in Victory Lane, I kind of forgot what we were going to do. And Todd's like, hey, you remember what we talked about? We told no one else about this. And so we led everybody out to the start-finish line, where it's the Yard of Bricks, and gave them a little kiss, and having no idea that it would become a tradition for every winner here at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So it's kind of cool to see that, and you know, it always brings up great memories as to 1996 and when it all took place.
So obviously during this time, Dale Jarrett with us from NBC Sports, we've had a lot of time to watch old races or old sporting events. You know, I just turned 33, so there are some things that from the early 90s that I watched, but I don't necessarily remember because I was so young. So I've had a lot of fun going back and watching old races. I can remember that first Brickyard 400 in 94 that Jeff Gordon ends up winning, but just how big of a deal it was for stock cars to, however you want to put it, invade or start running the Indy Motor Speedway that has such a rich history with IndyCar and open wheel. But what was it? You won in 96, as you said, but what was it like, though, to be there that day, to just everything leading up to it and finally turning them loose and going racing?
Yeah, you know, that day, in those few days of obviously leading up with practice and qualifying and then getting ready for race day, leading up to that, it was like that we had gone into another time. It was so magical to, you know, a lot had been said about, well, were race fans going to show up? Were we going to be accepted here? And things couldn't have been better from a standpoint of being welcomed here. And then the crowd that showed up was just incredible. You know, it was more fans than we'd ever seen at a NASCAR race. And it just continued to grow each year. But that first year, it was like, oh, my gosh. You'd come here and we had tested. We had practiced and everything leading up to the race. And, yeah, there would be 30,000 fans out here watching the practice sessions and then the qualifying. But then on race day, that was the most amazing thing, to see these stands fill up and how enclosed it made you feel as a driver coming down this long front straightaway, because it just seemed that everything got a lot more narrow than what it had been previously. You still were running the same group, but just seeing all of those people, that mass of people, here and supporting this. So it was an incredible day. My day didn't end the way that I wanted, even though we ran really well, but we got caught up in an accident. But I knew that this was going to be a place that I was going to want to do well at. And fortunately, starting in 95, I had a lot of good runs, finished third that year and then won in 96. So just an incredible feeling of being here and being a part of that history. And, you know, that's why I say this weekend, it's unfortunate, because you could bring all motorsports fans together if they were allowed here from the IndyCar side and from the NASCAR side. And, you know, it's racing and incredible racing here at the world's arguably most famous speedway in the world.
Dale Jarrett is with us. He'll be on the NBC coverage alongside Mike Tirico, which will be really cool, as the IndyCar series will run the road course tomorrow at 11 o'clock Central, the Xfinity series at 2 o'clock Central, and then the Cup guys on the Oval at 3 o'clock on Sunday for the Brickyard 400. We've seen an influx of road course races on the NASCAR schedule, whether it's like at Indy of running the road course there, or the Roval at Charlotte, trying to add some as they continue to make the schedule a little more diverse. Did you like running road courses in your career?
You know, I enjoyed the challenge. I won't try to pretend that I was an excellent road racer, but I became better and learned a lot about it. I talked to a lot of the guys that were good road racers and got a lot of good information from that. But I found it such a different challenge than what we did most other weeks. And at the time, during when I raced, we basically raced two. We ran Sonoma in June, basically, and then in August we would run Watkins Glen. And they were completely different venues and how you had to drive and attack the track. So you had to have different skills for each one. But you saw guys that didn't bother you. You talk about Rusty Wallace and Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart. You know, they were really good at both of those, and you knew who you had to outrun. But it was so much fun. But it has caught on so much in NASCAR now. The fans just love this type of racing because, you know, they're seeing a lot more of like short track racing, which is what they really love. I'm not taking anything away from the 2.5 mile track here or the 1.5 mile tracks at other places. But when you put them in tight confines, especially stock cars, then a lot of things are going to happen. And the fans have really taken a liking to the road courses. The Xfinity guys run, you know, 4 to 5 a year now. And it's really interesting to watch them navigate and maneuver. But, again, I found it a real challenge and fun. And these Xfinity drivers now today coming here for the first time and seeing this road course, you know, you might have walked around and saw where it was, but getting out there at speed is a whole different matter. So it's going to be a fun weekend. You brought up Mike Tirico. I talked about how special the whole weekend is. Well, that adds another special part of it for me to work with Mike Tirico here this weekend with these races. I mean, every big sporting event that that has happened over the years. Mike Tirico, you see him there, and he's so knowledgeable about everything. So I'm really looking forward to that.
You bring up, or we bring up the schedule and how the schedule has changed because of COVID-19, but also NASCAR made an effort to look at, you know, it's time to change things up. The championship race moving from Homestead to Phoenix this year, doing the doubleheader weekend with Pocono, those were all scheduled. But as we've learned through COVID-19, midweek races, big fan. Let's go ahead and keep those on the schedule because that would be a lot of fun. But then it's announced that NASCAR will be coming to our city in Nashville at the Nashville Super Speedway. Now, I would assume at some point in your career you raced out at the fairgrounds, correct?
Yes, correct, yeah. Yes.
Obviously, we would all love to see NASCAR at the fairgrounds as well, and I know that that's still on the table and that could still happen, but how important is it to not only have the awards banquet here but racing in Nashville because of the rich history of NASCAR?
Yeah, that's one of those things that it seems to me to be just a natural fit, and you've got a really good racetrack to run races on, and you've got a great city right there that can host the fans. It gives them great opportunities to do so many more things around a race weekend there. I think it's just a perfect match, and getting back there, I think it's very important to the sport and doing things differently. You know, as you pointed out, you know, we're changing things up in 2020. They're going to be different in 2021. I think hopefully, you know, Phoenix is a great place to host the championship race, but I think moving it to other racetracks in other cities is something that we will probably see in the future. And I think that, as you pointed out, having races midweek, this is very doable. And having practice hasn't diminished the racing at all. Matter of fact, it might have enhanced it a little bit. So I think there's a lot more opportunities out there. But coming back to Nashville, which was such a huge part of the success of the sport growing to a high level to begin with, is a great natural fit, and everyone in the sport's looking forward to that.
Something that I wanted to bring up with you, because you have a unique perspective on this. Your father, of course, Ned Jarrett, raced, and then you came into the sport had a Hall of Fame career in your own right. But just how difficult that is if you're a Dale Jarrett, a Dale Jr., a Chase Elliott, that's experiencing that now, to be that next generation driver, to know the things that your father accomplished and try and live up to that, so to speak.
yeah, but almost impossible. I mean, you think about Kyle Petty trying to be as successful as Richard Petty, his dad. I mean, he won 200 races and 7 championships. Dale Jr., as you pointed out, you know, he won 7 championships and was, you know, what the sport was built on, and the fans loved it. You either loved him or hated him because of the way that he performed with that. Chase Elliott is finding the same things and trying to live up to what his dad did, which is, again, nearly impossible because so many things change. And the thing that I always looked at with my career was I never envisioned trying to win 50 races like my dad. I was going to win as many as I possibly could. But he won 2 championships in the Cup Series and those 50 races. And to try to make a comparison is just really unfair to all of us that were in that position. But you also, deep down inside, used it as a motivating factor that, hey, this has been put out there for me. I don't have to look at, and from a Jarrett standpoint, I didn't have to look at Richard Petty or what Dale Earnhardt did. All I had to do was look within my household that my dad achieved this. And so those opportunities are there to go out and be the best that I could. And fortunately, things worked out really well for me, as they have for the other guys. So, it's an unfair comparison, if you will, in trying to achieve those things. But I think it can, if you use it properly, it's a compliment and a motivating factor too.
Did you use any time while of course we were all quarantining during this to watch some old races? I you know, one we'll always remember involving you, the Dale and Dale show with your dad on the call, mm-hmm. and you win the Daytona 500. I watched that entire race and that finish, and even as an Earnhardt fan, I found myself pulling for that 18 car of Joe Gibbs Racing at the time. But did you find yourself going back and watching some old races?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it was great to have something like that out there for us to look back on where the sport was at that time, how different the cars looked, Now, the racing was actually, from a driver's perspective, different at times and at certain racetracks, too, as to what you did and how you found your way around to be successful. So it was so interesting just to see all of that and kind of relive some of it. Because when you're in the middle of it, I mean, during my career, seldom did I ever go back and watch a race. It didn't matter, you know, obviously the 93 Daytona 500, I saw the end of that quite a few times just in talking about it because my dad was there doing the announcing, and they gave him the last lap to talk about as I was battling Dale Earnhardt there. And so, you know, you might see that, but other races, you just wouldn't go back and watch. And so I found myself watching these, and some of them, were fun to watch because I went on to win the race. Others were, you know, what people like Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt and Rusty Wallace, what they did to win those races. And, some of them I was in contention for the win, and others I wasn't, but just to see how they went about things. So it was just so interesting because that was a time we saw so many races from a time that I feel like was the best time to be in the sport. And I was fortunate to be there and to see those races and see the fans, the stands filled with fans was just incredible to watch.
Dale, as we let you go, you know, one thing that I get asked a lot, why are you such a racing fan? Outside of, I love seeing door to door at, you know, 180 miles an hour and close finishes, but the family aspect of NASCAR, and you mentioned that, you know, giving your dad the last lap to call his son home is one of those moments we'll always remember. Darrell Waltrip calling Mikey Waltrip for the Daytona 500 is one. But we've seen family really make a difference as of late. Bubba Wallace has been shown just how much this sport rallies around him and loves him no matter what. And I think that has been really cool to see this sport come together so much lately.
Yeah, you're exactly right. This year in particular, there you can look back on moments that make you really proud to be a part of this sport, and a lot of those are those family moments. And it's always been a lot closer knit family than what people might realize. We talk about that, but then we go out and race hard on Saturday night or Sunday, and that's what you do. But that doesn't take away from the fact that. You know, we care about our competitors and the people that we're around. And certainly, you know, you like certain ones better than others, but that's just human nature and that's competition. But what I've seen this year in a number of different respects, first off of making this all work around COVID and the restrictions that you have, everybody doing their job and doing their part, NASCAR putting all of this together to put competition back there for the fans to watch. Just on TV right now for the most part, but they'll be back hopefully very soon. And then the other side of it was to rally around and with Bubba and to see that really caring aspect and not just, you know, the guys not just saying this, but out here trying to make a difference in our world. And we're in a time right now that people want to make a difference and do the right things. And we're seeing that in the NASCAR community. I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Well, Dale, very well said. It's good to talk to you. Appreciate you taking the time. We'll enjoy your coverage alongside Mike Tirico all weekend with the IndyCar, with NASCAR, of course, with it all concluding Sunday at 3 o'clock with the Brickyard 400. Thanks so much for coming on with us. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And looking forward to the weekend here with NBC and everybody here at Indy. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
You too. Dale Jarrett, the 1999 Cup Series champion, the Hall of Famer, the 96 Brickyard 400 winner, and multiple-time Daytona 500 winner. And, Willie, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun to be a part of that and to have Dale Jarrett on the show. We'll react to some of that trivia coming up at 1 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Great stuff from Dale Jarrett, Hall of Famer, here on 102.5 The Game. We have heard from a couple of Hall of Famers today. Tom Glavine joined us earlier in the show. We've had a lot of fun interviews this week, as we have throughout this whole process here. And again, we're looking forward to more action. Nashville SC is in the air, heading to Orlando. Hopefully everything goes smoothly down there, and they're ready to get it going on Wednesday when they start their tournament play. Encouraging news from the NHL as the teams, they are hoping, will be able to maneuver through the training camp here. And then around July the 26th, according to Bob McKenzie, they would head to the hub cities in Edmonton and Toronto. You know what? I didn't know, Chase, that Dale Jarrett was going to be working with Mike Tirico this weekend on NBC. But, you know, there's another guy we've had a chance to talk to a few times is when he's passed through Nashville or done some games. He did the Predators game not long before things shut down. But remember, he did a game, and he hasn't done a whole lot of NHL games, but did one on NBC Sports Network. He's such a versatile broadcaster. Has he done any racing before?
Yeah, so they had him at the Indy 500 last year. I think he's done a Daytona race with NBC since he's been there. So he shows his versatility. I think it was last year. It was Tirico, Dale Jr., and Danica Patrick for the Indy 500. So that was kind of cool of having them on a. They had them on a pit box on pit road, and this year they'll be in the pagoda. There at the Indy Motor Speedway for coverage this weekend. So pretty cool that they're going to be all a part of this broadcast. But you heard Dale Jarrett light up talking about working with Tirico. That's kind of cool.
That was very good. And I know how much you enjoy talking racing. Chase, your enthusiasm comes out, your knowledge of the history there. So what jumped out at you? What was your favorite part of that interview?
Well, I think talking about just being that next generation driver, having to follow in your father's footsteps, because that's something that you're going to always have to do that. I mean, whether it's Dale Jr. and Dale Earnhardt or Kyle Petty and Richard Petty, Dale Jarrett, Ned Jarrett, Dale's son Jason raced for a little bit, now is one of the top spotters in NASCAR, and you're seeing it with the next generation now, Chase Elliott following his father, Bill Elliott, Ryan Blaney, Dave Blaney, John Hunter Nemechek, Joe Nemechek. So you're seeing the next generation come through. But I don't know if you've ever seen this before, but it was 93, the Daytona 500. Dale Jarrett was driving for Joe Gibbs. And I want to say 93, would Joe still have been coaching? I think he might have with the Redskins. Or the Washington.
Well, they won the Super Bowl in 91. I'm trying to remember. I feel like there was a year he just abruptly retired, but I don't remember when it was. That's right towards the end.
Let's see. I'm pulling it up right now. He retired. Yeah, 92. So he retired at the end of 92. So that was Joe Gibbs Racing started in 92. Dale Jarrett was driving in 93. And what was cool about that is in the broadcast booth was Ned Jarrett, his father. And at the time, you know, Ned was being a dad, and they got out of the other broadcasters, you know, we all have learned sometimes you need to know when to get out of the way. And they got out of Ned's way. They let him have the final lap, and he called his son home, beating Dale Earnhardt. It was a great finish to a race. And I remember he's talked about it, that there were people that were like, hey, you're a broadcaster, you gotta remain professional. And it was Dale Earnhardt that said, how are you gonna get on that man for being a father and cheering his boy home? And he was like, I have no problem with that whatsoever. And it's one of those iconic moments. And you know, 2001, the same race that Dale Earnhardt lost his life, but before we realized what had happened, Darrell Waltrip, in his first race in the booth for Fox, called Michael, his brother, to victory for his first NASCAR victory in like 400 starts, and won the Daytona 500. And those are moments that I look like, those are iconic moments of, you know, the family aspect of it. But so that was one. And then what he said towards the end with Bubba Wallace and everybody rallying around him, I thought was really cool. So Dale Jarrett is one of those that, he only won one championship, but he was always somebody to reckon with, especially in the 90s when he was driving for Robert Yates Racing, the 88 car.
What did you take out of what he said about Nashville? It seems like it's really unanimous. They'd love to see it come back here. But I don't know if we learned anything new from that, but clearly, you know, he wants to see it like everybody else come back to this city.
Yeah, because he knows the history, and, you know, like you said, he raced at the fairgrounds, and we know we're getting a cup race, at least for the next 4 years, out at the Super Speedway in Lebanon, but there's still a lot of hope that the fairgrounds will come into play too, as they continue to revamp the schedule, and as Nashville and SMI, Speedway Motorsports Incorporated, work things out to try and get them to run the fairgrounds and to fix it up, get it where it needs to be, I think there's a good possibility that we're going to have two cup races at two different tracks in the same city, or same market, I should say. So I think he recognizes, just like everybody else, just how important it is to be here and the history there. I mean, the late 80s, you know, that's one thing I wish I could have experienced, is the late 80s or mid 80s, I should say, racing out at the fairgrounds, and what that was like. They left in 1984, so well before I was even thought of. But I know that Dale Jarrett's one of those guys that recognizes the history of the sport. So, like you said, I don't know if we really learned anything new, but you can tell that he wants to be here too.
All right, as we look ahead, trivia is coming up at 1. We've been telling you all day. We are excited. I hope we'll have a lot of participation. We need a lot of participation for this final hour before the 4th of July weekend. So, with that in mind, Chase, one key piece of info people need to know. Is the guitar back this week? Is it ready to go? We had to soldier through it last week without you.
The guitar is ready to go.
So there will be a lifeline of the guitar if you don't know the answer to a question. So
but you only have to
not
answer
only
two
do
questions.
You only have to answer two questions, but also you have a lifeline if you need it. So I think your chances of winning are excellent. So with that in mind, we're going to take a break, and then we will get it ready to roll. Friday afternoon trivia, 4th of July weekend. Jump on in there if you want to be the first person up. We will open up the phone lines right now on purpose so you can be that first contestant. Jump on in there right now. Don't waste any time. You'll have a great conversation piece, if nothing else. And if you answer two in a row, boom, you've got a prize. We'll tell you about the prizes when we come back. 615-737-1025. Participate in trivia. Stay tuned. It's coming your way on the other side.